hey, are you thinking of joining a software project, but you're not sure if what the company says they're all about is really what they're all about, and if you're going to really enjoy the software project? Well, stay tuned, because today we're going to talk about how the hiring practices at the company you're about to join really has an impact on how fulfilled you're going to be on your software project right after this. Hey, it's Jamie, and today we're going to talk about episode 2 of the series I just started called How Agile Teams Grow Toxic. And today we're going to cover specifically, if you're thinking of joining a software team, you might be wondering, what do I have to look out for to know if I'm getting into a software company that probably has the signs that its culture is becoming toxic? One of the pieces of feedback I got on my last video, which I think was really good, was one of my viewers asked me to kind of clarify what I meant by a toxic software company. They didn't think I did a really good job of explaining it. And I think that's true. So I want to expand on it a little bit here. What I consider a toxic software team or company is a team or a company where, first, there's a couple different things. First of all, the turnover is high, meaning people are joining and then leaving the software company at a pretty rapid clip. Second of all, the people who are at the company, though they may seem like they're happy when you talk to them in front of leadership, if you go out to lunch or you go out to happy hour or you just know people privately and you speak to them about the job or about work, they're really unhappy and they feel like they don't have much of an impact and they feel like the company's making a lot of mistakes and that they're not listened to. Also, you'll find talented new people joining the company and then quickly feeling really frustrated or kind of getting sucked into the same, unfortunately, negative sort of behaviors and attitude of the people that are there. So I want to help this not happen to you. I've made many mistakes in my career after working with many different companies and on many different projects where I've joined a software project and I haven't really looked for some of the things I'm going to talk with you about today. So I'm sharing this with you again for the same purpose that I share most of the stuff on my YouTube channel, is I'm not trying to tell you, you know, this is the best way to do it or this is everything you absolutely need to know to be successful in a software development career, but I also just don't want to see you get burned or get put into crappy situations like I have. I've shared, you know, in many other videos the stories of the projects I've been on and some of the issues, and I'm going to share more. And I think by following some of the stuff I'm going to share with you and just considering it, maybe it'll help you so that you get on a project where it's less likely that you're going to really be frustrated and be, unfortunately, a part of the toxic culture of the company you just joined. So the first thing I want to talk with you about today is the concept of mirroring. You may have heard this. It comes kind of from the psychology community. And it's really that if you're talking with another person, they're going to like you more or tend to like you more the more you're like them. And this sounds really silly and intuitive and like everybody should know it, but it also has some implications on the hiring process for software companies that I think you need to understand. So the first of these is that, you know, I talked in my last video in this series, the first one, about how the values, sort of the core motivation that the founders have when they found the software company, can fall into three categories. And you can go back and watch that video or listen to the podcast again if you want to review it. But basically, money, fame or recognition, and impact being sort of the first principles that cause someone to decide to start a software company. Well, what you're going to find is if you go in and interview at a company, at a software company, the person who's interviewing you is going to be looking a lot for you to reflect back to them as a mirror almost, the same values and attitude about software development and about the company and about work that they have. And so oftentimes at these types of companies, the better job you're going to do in the interview is really just going to depend on how much can you make yourself seem like the person you're interviewing with. And what I want to talk to you about today and offer as an alternative to this is that though you will get that job, you need to think a little bit about, and I'm not telling you this to try to tell you what to do. I'm saying this partially because I've not done a good job of this in the past, and I'm starting to get better at it. To basically think, if I go into this interview and I come across like I'm as though this other person, and I actually compromise my own beliefs and my own, you know, perspective of, let's say, software development or what I think a good culture is, just to take this job, I need to know walking into it that now when I take this job, every day I'm there, if I'm frustrated with how things are going, really I should be frustrated with myself because I decided to take a job where I knew the principles underlying the company and what they were looking for were contrary to what I believe. So one of the things you're going to hear me talk about in a moment here is that I think you just need to be realistic that, you know, when you take a software development job, it can be really exciting. You can make a lot of money. You can work on some high profile projects, but be real about the fact that you're joining a company that's a business. And even though they may state in their company values a whole bunch of things that really look good to recruiters that are trying to pull talent into their company or to, you know, companies that are thinking of partnering with them, I can tell you I've worked for software companies or consultancies or with businesses that, you know, have software as part of their primary product before where they have, you know, let's say 5 to 7 company values. And they're all things that nobody would disagree with. You know, integrity. Is there a single person out there who's going to advertise, hey, we do business with a core value where we don't have integrity? No, nobody's going to do that. So I would personally, and this is just something I've had to learn from not doing it the right way, ignore any stated values of the company that are out there. You know, if the company says these are our company values, again, this is going to sound a little bit jaded, but it's just human behavior. People are going to put out there the perspective that they want the public to have about their company, not really the truth. So I think the best thing for you to do is just completely ignore anything, you know, when you're in the middle of an interviewing process that looks like it's trying to sell you on the job or talk about how great the company is. You're going to find way more out. This is, again, just my experience. You're going to find way more out about the company when you go through the interview process and you actually talk with people than you will just by, you know, whatever they feed to you to kind of get you in the door and interested in the opportunity. Getting back to those three core motivating values that the founders typically start the project or the company on, being, you know, again, money, fame, or impact, I want to talk a little bit about how when you go in an interview at one of these companies, they're going to expect you to mirror back those same values. The first example is if you go to join a company where the core business model or the motivation for that software company or software project being founded in the first place was primarily to line the pockets of the founders or just be very financially successful, during the interview, the people that they're first looking to pull into that company, this might be their first couple CTOs, their first, you know, sets of leadership, maybe their first technology partners, they're going to be looking a lot for people that mirror back to them a concern for money. They're also going to expect that when you're negotiating for your position, the biggest thing that's of most importance to you is money. They're not going to put as much emphasis on other workplace perks, things like flexibility or the ability to impact the product or the business. Because again, the founders, their core motivation for starting the company was money. And that's going to color, like I talked about in my last video, the attitude that they have when they go out and speak to talent that they want to bring into the company. They're going to have this sort of subconscious bias that they think, well, money's the most important thing to me when I want to do something, so it must be the most important thing to everyone else. And I just want you to be careful out there that when you go to join a software company, if you go to take a position at a company where you've done what I told you in the other video, you've done some research on the founders and you find that the attitude that they have is money driving everything, just know that if you're a very creative type of person, I tend to be the type of person who I often improve software projects in ways that are harder to measure. For example, making, let's say, the way that people write their contracts consistent. It might be harder to measure, well, this contract being consistent, you know, made us this much money or we won this many more contracts. So if you're a very creative, high impact type of person and you want to join a software company, not just to get a paycheck, but to actually have an impact and love your work, know that if you join a software company where that is not the core principle, the core, you know, founding value of that company is money, you're not often going to get rewarded as much for the hard work that you're doing. So it's just something that you have to keep in mind. And if you find yourself frustrated and feeling helpless at that company, remember, you signed up for it. So the second way the attitude of hiring managers or the founders can impact you when you go in for an interview and how talent is sort of brought into the company is if that founder built their company on fame and reputation. And I can give you a perfect example of this. There was a company that I was hired to join for a very brief period. They hired me away from another company that I'd been at a long time, and sort of their claim to fame was that the founder of this company I was about to join was pretty well known in certain technology circles around town here in Austin. And upon joining that company, I found that this person would talk down to their staff. They would override things that they had to say if they didn't agree with it. They were constantly kind of like stealing their fire and ideas that they would bring to them. They would sort of parrot out in the public as their own. And all this behavior, you know, you could boil it down to, wow, that's sure an egotistical person. But, you know, I've fallen into this trap too. If you're at a point in your career where you feel like you're not getting enough recognition, or you want to be looked at as a thought leader or influencer, it's really easy to, you know, prop yourself up above other people. And if you're leading a company, you know, one of the number one traits you have to have the ability to do is to let other people do great work and get rewarded and recognized for it. You know, this company that I worked for a little bit, it was really unfortunate because they had hired a ton of top talent all around the globe. And within a year, almost all those people left because the culture was purely toxic. It was an environment where people were lying. They weren't telling each other the truth. There was a lot of political infighting. And so just that core culture of that company was sort of rotten from the beginning. You know, if you're a leader of a software company out there and you're hiring, you know, talent into your company or on your project, and you're thinking that everybody's going to be excited because you've got a big name in the industry, I think you need to take a step back a little bit and think about the fact that, you know, people are not going to be excited about working for somebody who's well known for so long. You know, it might be like you meet a celebrity, let's say the first time, and you really think, wow, I get to meet this person I've always looked up to. But then, you know, you spend hours with them or days, or maybe you spend some time, you know, doing normal non-celebrity type activities, and you realize this is a real person, and you might not really even like what you find there. So I would just caution you, again, if you get into a company, you get onto a project, you feel like it's really hard to get recognition, and you feel like a lot of your ideas aren't really being credited to you, well, if you join that project and you saw signs from the beginning that sort of the claim to fame of joining this company was to get to work with this big name or this big individual, again, you signed yourself up for that. So I just want to help you, again, not run into some of the things I have. And if that happens to you, you know, have a healthy mindset walking into it. No, I'm walking into a company where I may get less recognition, where the ideas I come up with may not be credited to me. And if you can be okay with that, and maybe it's a, you know, an opportunity that pays a lot, or maybe it's an opportunity you're going to learn a bunch of stuff that you don't know right now, it might be worth it. But just have your eyes wide open when you go walking into it, and it's really going to save you a lot of pain. And finally, if you're going to join a company where upon research and interviewing people, you've sort of determined that impact or a mission really is the reason for that company's existence, the interview in that type of a company is kind of interesting. I've been in these interviews several times, and typically these types of companies, they're going to ask you a lot more about how bought into the vision of the company you are. In other words, if this was, let's say, a nonprofit company that was helping, you know, struggling, you know, students or you know, low-income people in other countries that needed support or things like that, they're going to be looking for you in the interview to talk about how important that mission is to you. And if it's not important to you, then a lot of times people get passed up who have, you know, again, great technical skills. They may have the exact technology experience or you know, the skills to do the day-to-day work that that company needs. But they aren't hiring just anybody who has the skills. They want to bring people into the company who care about the core impact that the company's making. So if you're going to interview at a company that is really kind of fanatic or really energized about their core mission, and you go in there and you're not energized about their core mission, that's going to set you at a disadvantage. And again, if you fake yourself through it and you try to pretend that you're into it, now you get to spend the next, you know, 6 months, year, 2 years, however long you spend at that project on that job, faking your way through a false enthusiasm for an impact that you never even meant to make because you just wanted income and you just wanted a job. So I'm not saying this because, you know, I think tons of people are doing that out there. I'm saying this because I've done this. You know, I've joined a company and kind of went, yeah, I'm not that bought into it, but, you know, I'll figure it out. I'm sure it'll be more interesting as it goes along. And no, it never was. And so I'm just trying to help you set yourself up with the right mindset. So when you join a software project, you have the highest likelihood that you're happy walking into it. Or if you're not happy, you at least know what you're getting yourself into. So next, I want to talk briefly with you about how the originating skills that the founders had, I talked about this in the last video, were the founders more of an engineer type of a person in their prior career, or were the founders more of a business side skills type of person? That's going to impact when you go to interview what they're looking for in that hire a lot. Again, I talked about mirroring. This is another example of that. Now, this is going to vary a lot at a company that's more mature, where its leadership knows I can't have all the skills that are necessary to run this company. That company is going to tend to be a little bit more healthy in that you'll find they're going to hire people that don't have the skills they have. They're going to be open to bringing in people who maybe have new ideas. So if the founder of the company was an engineering type of founder, the first few people they bring into the company and they interview, if they aren't thinking, well, I know everything about technology, I just need to bring, let's say, a marketing person in, because there's plenty of people that start up companies that way. An engineering type of founder, their first few hires, they're going to look for engineering acumen. It's stupidly obvious, right? They're going to look for people that like the same technology they do. Maybe they've, you know, messed around with technology that they wished they got a chance to, but they haven't yet. They're going to look for people that have the same attitudes towards agile, product development, you know, object-oriented programming, all that stuff. They're going to look for people who exhibit the same engineering focus that they do. On the flip side, if the founders were coming from more of a business standpoint in their prior career before they founded this new company, they're going to look for people who have a business understanding. Even if they're hiring, let's say, their first CTO or a couple programmers, they're not going to look for programmers that are just, you know, showing a lot of the same technical acumen they have, because they don't really have any. They're going to look for programmers that show an affinity for the business. And I actually think that's a very valuable skill for programmers to have. I've talked about that in other videos, but that's for another one. We'll go into more detail about that later. So let's talk about how this impacts toxicity at a company. Well, if there's a company where the founders of the company hire people in that are too much like them, the problem is that that company now is building somewhat of a cultural core where it's like, to work here, here's what you have to believe. You know, here's the skills you have to have. Here's the attitude you need to have. And, you know, at some companies where there's a very fervent culture, Facebook is a great example of that. You know, if you talk to ex-employees of Facebook, they talk about how everybody inside that company is highly encouraged to think about, you know, the work the same way. And companies I've worked for in the past were much the same way. When you join that company, within a very short period, you begin to sort of adopt the attitudes that they have. Well, at a company where they're hiring people simply to get work done, they look at programmers like a resource. I've talked about before, I hate that word. Programmers are people, they're not resources. But when they're trying to pull people onto a project, oftentimes a company that is less healthy will just look for people that have skills. You know, a perfect example of this is I was on a project recently where there was somebody who needed to be replaced with a specialized set of skills, and the interviews that happened were almost purely focused on, can you come in here, can you solve this problem and get it done, with no talk whatsoever about, you know, career of that person, what they're looking for, you know, is the company's sort of vision and where what they're trying to do and what they're trying to even offer to their customers something that that person's even interested in? Because they looked at it like, I'm not hiring this person as an employee. I'm not hiring this person as somebody who's going to, you know, expand sort of the knowledge of the company. I'm hiring this person because I have a need. I want them to fulfill that need, put them in that box, and that's it. And I talked about a video that I did many times called Creative Software Development. And it's a long kind of rambling video, but you really should watch it if you haven't watched it yet, because a lot of my other videos, I touch on what I talked about in that video. And I find that the healthiest companies that you're going to join, they realize that the employees that they hire are not there just simply to meet today's need, that they're an investment in a person that they can then leverage and get talent and creativity out of over the lifetime of the company, not even the current project. And so when you're interviewing, if you find that you're asked a lot of technical questions, but you aren't asked really hardly anything about your career goals, or you aren't talked to about how your career goals, you could find opportunities at that company. I find many technical companies that hire, you know, technology people, when I go in for interviews, or I've talked to other people who run into this too, they think an opportunity is simply to work on a language that you're maybe interested in, or an opportunity is you're going to get to work on a microservices project or something like that. And, you know, if you're somebody who feels kind of stuck in your career, where, you know, maybe you've been working on some legacy technology. This has happened to me many times in my career. You kind of get stuck, you know, and you need to re-up your skills and move to the next thing. Getting to work on something where, you know, that team claims that they're using sort of the latest, greatest framework that you want to use is obviously an attractive thing. But keep in mind, if that's what they're selling you on for the opportunity, there's a couple things you have to keep in mind. One is that whoever's interviewing you may have no idea what that term even means. If they're just like a project manager or a development manager that hasn't coded in the last 5 to 10 years or something like that, their grasp of what microservices means or something like that, I mean, I'm just giving you an example, it could be any technology, is going to be very minimal at best. And so you're relying heavily on this pitch they're giving you about what you're going to get to do based on somebody who might not really know how accurate that statement is. So just be careful. And then the second thing is, you know, they're selling you again on that your opportunity to learn a technology is what's going to fulfill you. And I think that's very immature. That's part of the reason why software developers tend to join companies and they just bail after a couple of years. You know, a more healthy company realizes our products are going to change. Our requirements are going to change. We're going to find things out about people, you know, who have skills and don't that we didn't know. I talked about this in my Secret of Scrum video before. And so having a team and people that are resilient to change, that are going to work well with each other, is really way more valuable than just having a bunch of talent that can get a short-term need done. But again, if the company's founders have the attitude in their mind that I am the smartest person in this company, all the good ideas come from me, and I'm just hiring people to fill a need, then that's how they're going to hire. That's how they're going to treat you and other people when they bring you in. And so don't be surprised when you join a company where, if you, again, do the research to find out sort of the real attitude behind the leadership, if when you get in there, you know, you find that things aren't as rosy as you thought, because you kind of knew going into it that company is going to look for people that are going to mirror the same values that they have. And that may be a complete mismatch with where you're going. And it may really make you miserable. And it may have made most of the people on the project miserable. And a lot of the companies that I go into where the culture is unhealthy, where you have leadership that thinks everything's great, I talk to the people who are doing the work and they hate it, is simply for this exact reason, that as the company grew, they just added more and more people with sort of this false promise of what their job really meant for them. And now you've got people who are there really under false circumstances. You know, they're making a paycheck, but what was promised as far as the influence that they'd have on the product and what their career growth meant may not have matched, you know, what the reality is on the ground. So what are the experiences you've had with hiring? And do you feel like the company you're working for now, or maybe some of the projects you've been on in the past, matched the public sort of perspective and persona that the company put out about what their values were? Or was reality quite a bit different, which is often the case in my experience? In the next video, I'm going to talk about how forecasting and deadlines, which is probably one of the most, you know, difficult things to talk about in software development, how that's looked at by the company is again impacted by the attitudes of the founders and the leadership and their first few hires, and how a company full of experienced people whose experience is actually not matching reality over their career can just repeat the same mistake and create a new toxic software company where everybody's doing everything the same way, but it's actually not producing any better results. And people aren't even really happy about their job and feeling kind of trivialized. And often when that happens, they leave. Thanks again for watching. And if you haven't subscribed, please consider hitting the bell to be notified. And you can also listen to this anytime you want on many podcast platforms. So until next time, thanks.